True Wealth, welcome back. How about to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor? This is Kevin, your host. True Wealth, always brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington, your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. As always, buying and selling all forms of gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. You might think, what's platinum? What's palladium? You start looking at these metals, folks. Pretty good value in them. Palladium's kind of been on a pretty good roll. I'd say it's up probably, I don't know the exact number, I could look it up, but maybe 50% in the last year or maybe more. These metals do this kind of stuff, and it's not really even a temporary increase. It's been much higher, and it's all supply and demand. Platinum's an interesting metal. It's used in all the catalytic converters in every car pretty much on planet Earth. It's used in all high-speed, high-heat electronics, and it's 100 times as rare as gold, and it's a metal that gets consumed. It's used in all kinds of refining processes. It's used in chemistry labs, scientific activity. It's a pretty interesting metal. And, of course, gold gets used up incredibly it's consumed as well. Thing is, it's recoverable, but it gets lost, you know. And they use gold in, I mean, endless applications. You're probably familiar with, you know, gold is extraordinarily conductive, which means it carries 100% conductivity, which means it carries 100% of the heat energy, or that can be electricity through it. It's one of the most conductive, I think it may be the most conductive metal on Earth, which of course makes sense because gold is an incredible element, made by God with phenomenal attributes. Gold is, like I said, it's 100% conductive. It will not tarnish from any naturally occurring substances on Earth. It won't even, you know, volcanoes just refine it. It stays together. It doesn't evaporate. It's non-allergenic. It's inert. It has no chemical reactions to anything. So people love to use it for jewelry because there's no reaction to their body. One thing that's really interesting in a study that was done back in the early 90s in Harvard, a guy was doing his PhD on the fact that his theory was that all major wars through history, he came up with this theory that had gold at the center of them. And, you know, fighting over gold and wars that you wouldn't even think, he did his research and there was gold, money. Because the thing is, if you fight over fiat currency, if you conquer a country or you steal their money, that money is only good if they keep their promise to honor it. It's only good if whatever's backing it, which in our case is nothing, remains. Gold, on the other hand, and silver, speaks for itself. These are metals that require absolutely no third-party affirmation. I've had people come in countless times and want to buy a gold coin and say, Do I get a piece of paper with that? Do I get a certificate with that? Well, we can give you a certificate of authenticity. But the thing is, you don't need it because gold is gold. And you might think, well, how do I know it's gold? And the thing I always say is, if you ask, how do I know it's gold? How can I, you know, be sure it's not something else? I know from hearing you say that you have never held an ounce of pure gold in your hand. Once you hold it, you're like, oh, it is so dense and so conductive. I could literally take an ounce of gold out of the freezer, drop it in your hand if it's pure gold, and in seconds it will be the temperature of your hand, maybe 5-6 seconds, but it's that conductive. In an ounce of gold, it's not that big, but it's, you know, a little smaller than the old silver dollars, but it's amazingly conductive. And when they did this study back in the 90s, the psychology department got involved, which happens a lot with certain kinds of studies about human behavior. the guy was a historian and he got a psychology department involved. The same thing happened at the economics department here in Gonzaga. There was a professor who loved to do coins, and he wanted to do a huge research project on what the best way to sell coins online was, because he liked coins and he wanted to sell them. So we got a young guy to actually do a PhD thesis on it. And they did an extraordinary level of in-depth research. They actually brought in the coin department, or the psychology department, in this case, the coin economic study, because they ended up dealing with auctions. And so now they wanted to know, okay, what is the psychological motivation behind auction bidders? What drives an auction bidder? Is it just price? Is it desire for the item, or what? And do you know, when they got into that deeper, they actually found out, and folks, learn a little piece, a tidbit of wisdom from this. They discovered that when two people are bidding on an item, of course, it doesn't apply to every single bidder, but it applies to the mass of them. When two people or more are bidding on an item and one person leapfrogs another or beats the other, they actually believe that it is an intellectual battle. Okay, they believe that if someone's paying more for something, they know more about it. They believe that there's some bit of knowledge that the competitive bidder has that they don't have. And so they literally start to believe that they're competing with somebody else's intellect. They think it's a battle of intelligence. And it's actually, in many cases, just the opposite. It can be a battle of egos. It can be a battle of foolishness. It can be, of course, a battle of intellect. I'm not going to deny that. Knowledge is power. And when you come to auction situations, and believe me, I've, been around this a while, it is possible for that to take place. But that's not the most likely scenario. So if you get into bidding on eBay or something, don't be a fool. Please understand that if you're bidding in an auction and you win and you're proud of yourself, you must realize you are the highest buyer in the world at that given point in time on that item. And people will pay sometimes way too much. One of the most common mistakes, or whatever you want to call it, that we see happen on eBay buying is people will buy problem coins. There's dealers that will specialize in selling coins with problems, or, some kind of alteration, cleaning, scratches, whatever. And people will literally, they don't know. You get the collector in a vacuum, and the collector in a vacuum is a grave threat to himself, okay, because he doesn't gain knowledge. The American Numismatic Association, which is sort of the watchdog and the educational group for coins, a.k.a. numismatics, they have knowledge, wisdom, education, something like that. They have kind of an old, it's not a teapot, but it looks like whatever, a genie comes out of. But it's a sign of wisdom or knowledge. And it's knowledge and education and something else. And it's important that you know what you are doing. Knowledge is power. So don't ever underestimate the ability of wisdom. You can't figure things out without knowledge and without power, or without education, etc. So what I was originally discussing was the study on the innate desire for gold that was done in like 92 at Harvard. So the theory was gold is at the root of all these crazy battles on Earth, And as a side note, folks, that tells you something. It is built into us, perhaps. So they took that theory. Is gold innately desired? That means, do you have an instinct where you like gold? After all, in Genesis chapter 2, God said, there's gold in the land of Habalah and gold is good. And he used, as I've discussed countless times, the highest, most positive, biblical, complementary, ancient Hebrew word you can come up with, Tov, T-O-W-B or T-O-V-B, depending on the translation. It is the highest, most complimentary word possible. It is so filled with positive connotations that there it takes like 22 English words to really describe it. So he not only did he take the effort by the second chapter of Genesis. Now you got to remember, the purpose of the Pentateuch, that's the first five books of the Bible, is a synopsis of the highlights of Israel. Okay, so Moses constructed a highlight, and he refers in there to other books. For example, I think it's about three times it says, "Is it not written in the book of Jasher?" Okay, and then there's a few other books in there I can't tell you off the top of my head. Well, the point is, supposedly in the canons, that one of the criteria for choosing scripture was if it was mentioned, if they believed a book was inspired and another book was mentioned in it, they automatically assumed that book also was inspired, okay? And so they began to, okay, anyway, I won't go down that road. Let's go back. So basically, you've got second chapter of Genesis. God says, this is the good stuff. This is the great stuff. The point was, Moses was doing a synopsis of the key high points of the history of Israel. And chronology was important, the order of events, and accuracy in the Bible is extraordinarily important. There's no inaccuracies that have ever been found in the Bible. As a matter of fact, over 5,000 years from the earliest writings of ancient Hebrew, depends how far you go back, 4,000 years, depends. No inaccuracies. That was one of the great things with the Dead Sea Scrolls. There were so many people that said the book of Daniel was so specific. Daniel said in this exact number of weeks, a.k.a. years, Jesus Christ, the Messiah, is going to come to the earth. He described Palm Sunday. He described everything about Jesus appearing in the temple. And he was right to the second. And people who study that and know it, who are not believers, are like, okay, there's a lot of things that I can refute and throw out in the Bible, but that's not one of them. So the automatic response is, well, obviously the book of Daniel was written after the death of Christ. Well, Dead Sea Scrolls show up in 1948. Ironically, they were preserved from the time of the overthrow of Israel by Rome. They were preserved clear through nearly 2,000 years of history, in which case they would have been utterly devastated. Those words were preserved until 1948, the year that Israel regathered in the Holy Land, which is also the year that, you know, it's a significant year because Christ used that as a benchmark of the generation that sees the fig tree bloom and that sees the regathering of Israel and all this will not pass away until they see the time of the coming of the Son of Man. Question is, what's a generation? Is it 40, 60, 100 years? Is it an average lifespan? No one's quite nailed that. There's a bunch of different scenarios for that I won't get into. Obviously, if 48 was the regathering, 67 was the recognition as a nation by United Nations. Some people, you know, debate that, and it doesn't matter. Obviously, it's not 40 years because that would have put it at either 1988 or 2007. 60 years doesn't make sense. Our average lifespan of 75 or 80, you take what God said we'll live roughly 70 years. So you take 70, you add it to 1948, that puts you at 2018. You know, there's so many different ways to slice and dice it. We don't know for sure, but we do know that this generation will see Christ's return because we saw the regathering of Israel. And so that is a very critical component of our faith. It's very significant. It's very, very profound. So back to the basics. The innate desire for gold is what they're studying for, and I'll stay a little tighter on this. So he theorizes that they're innate. They get the psychology department. The best way to tell if human beings are innate, in other words, that we have an instinct that overrides or supersedes our intellect, is with young children, very young infants. Children that have not been tainted or influenced by culture that much. So they got, this is where it gets fuzzy, it's been a while, but roughly I believe they got 10 pairs of children between the ages of 3 and 5. They put them in a room somewhere, two at a time, well, actually one and then another. They'd put one child in, acclimate the child to the room, throw in some temptation devices for children like toys and maybe even a little candy or there was something else they put in there I can't quite recall. But anyway, these children would begin playing. They'd begin engaging. Child number one would. Then the administrator of the study would give child number one, the first one in the room, a 1 ounce pure gold coin. Then they would first observe the behavior of the child with the coin. And then secondly, they would introduce a second child, let him acclimate to the room, and then make it clear to that second child that the first child has this 1 ounce gold coin. I can't even recall if they took it out and let the other child touch it or what. I believe they may have, and then returned it to its original holder. In like 8 out of 10 cases, struggles broke out over that coin, okay? And you can say, well, of course, if they handled it a certain way, you know, if they gave it to the kid, then took it away and said, here, give it to this other kid. But, you know, that isn't likely. And even if it was, it still doesn't explain an 8 out of 10 response of, they said, either violence or aggressive manipulation. So the first child holds the coin. The second child comes in the room, gets acclimated, gets exposed to the coin, gets to hold the coin, and the coin goes back to the first owner, and struggle breaks out 8 out of 10 times. That's not normal, okay? It's just not normal. And the other thing is that, you know, it was handled administratively properly. The point being that they theorized statistical analysis says that the responses that they viewed, according to psychologists, clearly showed an innate desire for gold. So we have actually experimented with this with infants in my family. I have 4 grandkids. I've had employees with infants. We have experimented with this with infants where literally you give them a 1 ounce pure gold coin and then let them loose. You let them go see whatever they want, do whatever they want, play with whatever they want. They do not give that coin up. They don't give it up lightly. If they hang on to it, it feels good, okay? Now, you might say, ooh, materialism. You like the feel of gold. Yep. Call it what you want. God created an economic system, and he drew us to that item as the central fashion for our economic system. The only way they could have ever gotten us to where we are today is by literally confiscating the gold or taking it away. And they, you know, people use the term confiscation loosely. This name that's been given to the purchase, the buyback, the repurchase of gold as the confiscation is somewhat deceptive. I in no way condone the deception that the government used to do it, because what had really occurred. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, here's what it is. After the stock market crash of 29, and the Great Depression settling in, the Great Depression was beginning to settle in. Our adversaries, our allies, I'm sorry, overseas that we had debt with, still don't understand that, from World War I. You know, we go in and we save the Allied forces, yet we owe debt. That is what war is about, folks. It is about money. There are bankers And believe me, the Rothschilds and so on and so forth, Bilderbergers, they are making money hand over fist on both sides of a war. This is why they've created a fiat currency system, because now they don't even have to loan out real money. They create money out of thin air. And as long as you and I agree that it's money, in other words, we have faith in the money, it continues to circulate. So they create fiat currency so they can print as much as they want. Every single dollar that leaves the Federal Reserve through a ridiculous series of events that you can't even fathom or imagine, for a very good reason. They make it so complicated and with so many steps for two reasons, basically. Number one is to line the pockets of countless bankers along the line, as well as lining the pockets of the membership owners of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is a privately owned corporation that is officially in control of our entire monetary system. They are creating hyperinflation, as John Maynard Keynes said they should, because his economic system is designed to destroy your finances and my finances, which is why, you know, the 10 planks of communism include a progressive income tax. After all, we have to destroy those filthy rich people and, wink, wink, nod, nod, give the money back to the people. Well, guess what, folks? Do a little history study. How many times have you ever seen communism raise the lifestyle standard of anyone other than those at the very top? When is the last time you saw communism raise the lifestyle standard of any of the working class people? Never, 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 okay? It destroys it every time. And so the argument is, hey, they just didn't implement it properly. Well, that's a lie, because the thing is, the whole utopian concept of communism is that you're going to have this coup or overthrow of, by, and for the people. Where do you suppose they got that idea for a government system? Maybe from the United States, you know, the Declaration of Independence. And so, you know, it's supposed to be this overthrow, this coup. And then while things are being structured properly, now remember, this is the theory of communism. I've had people take clips of my show, like 3 and 5 second clips where I say something and they take it absolutely out of context. I've gotten emails one time, something I said went viral and they made me sound like a racist, hate baiter, you know, whatever. So what they do is they take, oh, there I go. I got sidetracked. So with the whole deception, I remember I was covering on the whole deception of communism, they tell the people that, well, with our economic system, that's it. Our economic system is designed to absolute fleece the wealth of the people. It raises the level of standard of the high ups. The bottoms literally are being fleeced of all their wealth. They're being forced into a caste system where they become poorer and poorer and become powerless and more dependent on the government. The whole concept of God is that you develop personal wealth, personal property, personal motivation. God's system works. It builds beautiful, amazing, incredible societies. Man's system tears down and destroys and literally steals the wealth from the working man. And not the rich. It gives it to the rich. We start out with a progressive income tax, which is a total fallacy. It's a total flawed farce because it is designed to just take all the money and give it back to the government, because with the fiat currency system, they are printing money out of thin air. In the Coinage Act of 1792, our founders wrote clearly that the exact composition of each face value, each denomination of coin. The basis for gold was the eagle. The basis for silver was the dollar. The dollar's name was based on the thaler, which went back a very, very, very long time. It was a trade unit, I believe, based on like 400 grains of silver. We don't use grains anymore. We use troy ounces. And so the old silver dollars are only 90% pure, and it's a little different composition because they had to be hardened in order to circulate. The eagle was the basis for gold. An eagle is the old eagle was approximately a half ounce of gold, and it was a $10 face value. The modern American gold eagle is 1 ounce. It's a bullion coin. It was never designed to circulate. It has an ounce of gold in it, and it's twice the size, but it is not designed. So the two, if you hear the term eagle for a new coin, it's a 1 ounce American gold bullion coin. If you hear the term eagle for an old coin, it's a half ounce of gold, and it's a $10 face value. The old $20 gold coins, which are the same size and in some cases the same design as the new 1 ounce American Eagle bullion. I hope I'm not losing you. I'll try again. So the new gold coins are called the new American gold coin bullion coins are called American Eagles. They come in all denominations from a 10th ounce, quarter ounce, half ounce, and an ounce. But for simplicity, we're discussing the 1 ounce gold American Eagle. The modern 1 ounce gold American Eagle, which started in 1986, is the same size approximately, within a millimeter or so, of the old double eagle. The old double eagle, which ceased production in 1933 during the confiscation, has a full ounce of gold. It's got a $20 face value. And this is where we came up with what we refer to as the St. Gaudens, probably the most beautiful coin ever made in America. Certainly one of the most famous. But, you know, people argue, what about the Walking Liberty half dollar? When they're uncirculated, they're gorgeous. When they're circulated, they're just a coin. But they are scarce. What about the Morgan silver dollar? Absolutely gorgeous as well. So there's all kinds of subjective opinion, okay? And so we had these fixed standards for our money. Absolutely undeniable. The modern bullion coin is not made for circulation. We have gone completely off of the gold standard. In 1971, we officially went away from it under Nixon, okay? The gold standard continued on until 1971. And what was happening at the time in 33, like I said, 32, 33, we'd had a huge economic downturn. Our allies had debt they wanted to get paid, and they decided they would no longer accept our paper money in payment form, okay? Now, that's a problem because that's what we had converted over to. And here's a bigger problem. A much bigger problem is the fact that once we began the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, it was instituted in an emergency meeting of Congress, essentially, with a extreme fraction of members there, nearly all of whom were requested to be there. It set up this Federal Reserve system after hours, behind closed doors, secretly, without the people's approval. And so they had tried numerous times to get the people to accept it. They finally came closest when they got a guy named William Jennings Bryan. He was a populist. Now, Trump is very much a populist. However, the media is out to character assassinate that guy at a level you cannot believe. Now it is politically incorrect to be wealthy and successful. People that have no knowledge of business constantly refer to Donald J. Trump as a reality TV star. He is a billionaire real estate mogul who is building some phenomenal structures and growing, you know, cities and skylines and absolutely doing things to the top-notch quality without any, you know, no hesitation. He builds phenomenal quality. I was just back in his D.C. hotel. He bought the old bot. He took a lease out on the old post office building, which is, yes, magnificent. And they absolutely did a job with that. It has a central courtyard area that is incredibly huge. I mean, I don't know the exact dimensions, but I'm thinking I would say it's probably at least the inside courtyard area, probably at least 200 feet long, probably longer. It's probably almost not quite the size of a football field. It's probably 200 feet long and 100 feet wide. And then they covered it with, it's covered long ago with the most beautiful glass cover top that they used to do with stuff. Magnificent. And he did a beautiful job of maintaining all the old, original, archaic architectural components of the building. The old spiral staircases. The building's about 7 stories high. They have spiral staircases. It was built in the 1880s. They have spiral staircases back then. Later on, they added an elevator. You can see where the elevator shaft was added to it. And that was the old elevators, which are absolutely gorgeous. You know, they're just steel and I don't want to call it, whatever they call it. I don't know. There's like mesh. It's absolutely gorgeous. So you can see out the entire way. You can see in from every floor as it goes by. Just a workmanship of art. You know, just incredible. So he does this wonderful job. I met many people that know him personally that work for him. The director of the entire hotel, I got the privilege one night of having a scotch tasting with him of 30-plus-year-old scotch. And some people might go, oh, you're a Christian and you drank alcohol? Yeah, I did. I went to, it was my son's 30th birthday, and we went to a tasting of very high-end, you know, scotch. You know, you get these little tastes. It's not like you're grabbing the bottle and drinking it like water or anything like that. But we got to spend time with the director of the entire hotel operation, the director of food and beverage. It was his 40th birthday. He happened to come in the room and spend time with us. We got to meet some really neat people. Apparently, Ivanka and Donald come in and out of there a lot. They can't tell us when they do. One day when we were there, one of them had just come in the building, but the guy couldn't tell us who they were for security purposes. And it's just magnificent. So anyway, Trump does terrific work. And the people that work there, because it's a newer hotel, they support him. And that was a breath of fresh air as well, to be sitting in a lobby of a huge hotel where everyone's a Republican, because otherwise they wouldn't even be there. So it's kind of like all the pressures that are happening in society right now, folks. One of the good things that's coming from it is it separates the wheat from the chaff, as the Bible says. It's making you, believers, stand up and be strong about what's going on out there. If you're not convicted to do that, you need to check your spiritual code out, because you're not this is a time to speak the truth. Do not be dumbed down. Do not be pushed down. This is a time of spiritual warfare. When you hear the term warfare, what does that mean to you? That doesn't mean somebody else is going to fight your battle for you. We may have armies that go out and fight, and God does too. They're called angels. But God calls us to be his warriors, to fight for him when his truth is under attack and under fire. And, you know, half of us says, well, you know, this too shall pass. But the other half that's a little more intellectual can look at the history of mankind and say, do you know what? This happens over and over and over. Man does the same repetitive behavior. They take over countries. They destroy it. They slaughter people. They fleece their wealth. They destroy the land until finally someone positive comes in and or allies and destroys them. And then it all starts over again. This is not necessarily a temporary swinging of the pendulum. The spiritual component that's attacking this country, folks, is unlike any other thing it's been under. It is becoming a mass power movement. It is being led and run by young kids that are living at home with their parents, playing video games and fantasizing on the web about being a part of the anonymous programming group or V for Vendetta. They don't understand what they are doing. You know, as Christ said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. They're being fooled. They're being conned by George Soros in the effort or in the spirit of breaking the shackles of conformity. These young children are becoming more conformed than they ever dreamt because they are becoming puppets of large, powerful conglomerates like George Soros, who owns more stuff than you can imagine. I've gone over on the show recently with all the damage and carnage that he's left behind in his lifestyle or in his life, which includes the rounding up and capturing the Jews, his own people, turning them over to the Nazis to preserve his own life, and helping the Nazis confiscate the assets of the Jews. That's how it all began. He's got no conscience about it. He said, if I didn't do it, somebody else would have. So that's how he started. And then from there, he's done some of the most immoral, unethical behavior fathomable, trying to literally shut down nation after nation, country after country, economy after economy. His last big swing, I think, was Hong Kong, and where the Hong Kong banks came in with huge amounts of money, like $118 billion, to compete with George Soros's attempt to destroy the market. And it hurt Hong Kong's reputation, etc., but at least they were able to stave him off. He owns over something like, you know, a while ago, maybe a couple of years, they said 423 activist websites that George Soros has college kids working on every morning. They get their narrative in whatever communication form it may be. Perhaps it's an email. I don't know. But what I do know is that he's got these children pumping propaganda on these websites, lies. And then when he duplicates the website 400 times and you run into the same story 5 times and it says the exact same thing, it might be a lie. One thing to look for if you're on the internet searching and you want to know how to spot these websites, it's very simple. If you write an article and I copy it word for word, that's called plagiarism, okay? But if we're associated, if we're the same company, and I just am operating under a different DBA doing business as, I can do that all I want because there's no internal patent or in copyright trademark stuff. So what happens is when you're, and I'm finding this, you're researching something, you want information, and you see paragraphs written up about it. You go to other websites, you see the same paragraph, and I mean verbatim, word for word, abbreviation for abbreviation, punctuation for punctuation. That is when you know you're being had. That is not when you know that you are reviewing paid for web placement. Now, that's not always bad. It may have to do with something that makes sense, like maybe it's a nonprofit medical organization that wants to teach you how to deal with tough situations. I know there's websites out there that will literally, you know, help drug addicts, teach them how to taper off of heroin and stuff. And folks, as a quick side note, have compassion for people that are heavily addicted. Do not judge them because you are not with them. People who are heavily addicted have emotional scars often. They have very sensitivity. Addiction is not as simple as stopping eating cake, okay? There is a biological thing that happens, and Christians struggle with this. They say, oh, it's demonic, okay? And then they'll use the example Well, Jesus was able to heal everyone. The apostles brought him this young man who was filled with some demon, and Jesus said, these ones require prayer. And he said, woe, you of little faith. And he was really disappointed in the apostles that they couldn't cast it out. That was Jesus, okay? We're not Jesus. And Jesus gave the blessings to the apostles. He gave them the ability to do the incredible. He says, we'll do greater things. But he doesn't always tell us when and where. So he'll come to our rescue. And quite frankly, I don't know what that means. I talked in the last show about the restrainer being lifted so that people are becoming more unruly and more agitated, and the acceleration is starting to grow. Okay, so there's definitely some kind of restraint there that is being lifted on us, which is beginning to take over. So let's go back and I'll finish my Coinage Act of 1792 speech, which we're not doing very well on. Coinage Act 1792 specifically broke down exactly the composition of all of our coins, the names of them, and let America fly. What a beautiful, you know, monetary system we started. In the Coinage Act of 1792, it says specifically, just as Article 1, Section 8 of our U.S. Constitution says, all responsibility, this is a serious paraphrase, for creating, monitoring, and distributing money is given to the hands of Congress. So, what happens? Well, we debase that currency, right? We give the responsibility away. And this is what it blows my mind. Initially, with the Constitution, the federal government was given 9 basic responsibilities, okay, to do. I don't have those right in front of me, but trust me, they have 9 fundamental responsibilities. So from there, we have taken on more stuff, and under FDR, it was a runaway train. You talk about turn of the century, 1900, bringing communism in. I was just speaking with a friend of mine about the level of magnificent architecture and building done in D.C. by our founding fathers. Just like in the book of Daniel, where he talked about the Daniel diet, okay? It's just because it's Old Testament, people say it doesn't apply. Wrong. If God knows what's good for our body under Daniel's time, it's the same now, probably. And there's probably a lot of wisdom and knowledge to be had there. But when Daniel says, I refuse to eat the king's rich diet, let me eat my diet of vegetables and water, and then we will test ourselves to see who's better. It said that Daniel was 10 times as intelligent as these other kids. And so what I was speaking to my friend about today on the phone on my way in was, isn't that exactly what God wants from us? I mean, really? Doesn't God want us to stand out as the best of the best, striving for excellence, seeking the best? And, you know, some of us have been maimed and injured by traumatic events in our lives, and we have chosen to succumb to that. I've seen people that have been molested and things like this, and they'll say they're over it or they've moved on and forgiven. They haven't. I've done a lot of studies on it. They have not. Anyone who's molested, especially by a parent, when they're healthy, they can talk about it openly, not, you know, brag about it, but they can talk about it openly. But more importantly, they will speak of the predator as a sick person. They may forgive, but they will literally speak about the person in third person and with disdain, with an acceptance, a disdainful acceptance, I guess. In other words, they'll talk about them as a criminal and not as their father or their mother or whatever. When they continue to refer to that person as their dad or whatever, that's from my studies, that means they have not properly dealt with it. Now, I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist. It's just something I read, an opinion. And so, but a lot of us will choose to be frozen in life, unwilling to change and just stuck there Others of us will embrace change. Change brings opportunity. Opportunity brings growth. Growth brings perseverance, right? And the Bible is very clear. The ultimate goal of all of our challenges is to grow in perseverance, to be able to keep going and never give up and not look back and not become overwhelmed, right? So that's, you know, where we really, really need to grow. And our founding fathers built a system based on that premise. It was phenomenal. Gold and silver at the core. The gold and silver standard has maintained through all written human history. People think that we are somehow unique and came up with this new fiat currency system that no one else ever thought of. As Solomon says, there's nothing new under the sun. The bottom line is this. Nothing substitutes for precious metals-based assets or biblical hard assets. Gold and silver-based assets, livestock, real estate, human life. That is what God made for money, for wealth, period, okay? When man comes in. So what happened during 33 or right around there, we owed money to the Allies, like I said. Why? From World War I? I don't know. We saved their bacon, but apparently that's how wars work. It's a big scandal and a ripoff. They would not accept our paper money. They'd seen the collapse of 29. They wanted gold. Well, the problem was once they instituted the Federal Reserve Act deceptively, they tried to throw it at the people numerous times. The people wanted decentralization of banking. They got William Jennings Bryan on board, who was conned. They convinced the people softly, mildly, not in when I mean the word convinced is mild. People were still leery. They convinced them to let him push it through and begin amendments. The problem is that because they lied to the people, they had to give people assurance that it was still backed by a gold or silver. And so they continued to put gold and silver redemption clauses on all the paper money to make people feel good. So people kept depositing their gold and silver in the bank, thinking, well, we're good. We're on a gold standard. And then what happened is, all those silver dollars and all those gold coins people deposited in the bank were never to be seen again. During this whole period of time, our government was confiscating this stuff, keeping it, holding it, hoarding it. Why would they do that? Think about it. There's a simple reason. That's because once they left that gold clause on during the Federal Reserve Act on forward, they began to create banknotes by the droves that said there was gold or silver to back them, but there was not. And it got to the point where there was 33 times as much paper money out there that was supposedly backed by gold as there was gold in our reserves at Fort Knox. We could never possibly cover it. So we had two choices at that point. Admit the fraud, or come back and get all the gold and silver and say, you can't own it, we need it, it's patriotic, we need it to pay off debt, and never let anybody know what just happened, okay? That's what took place. They absolutely conned everybody. So in addition, they began to buy back all the people's gold at $20 an ounce. Now, realize all U.S. gold, all U.S. legal tender coinage was exempt from any buyback program, confiscation, whatever you want to call it. Why? Because it's legal tender coinage that our government has never turned their back on or obsoleted, thank goodness. You can try to find major countries. Every country, folks, has had a currency devaluation, not the United States of America. Now, we have had inflationary consumption of the dollar for sure. From the Coinage Act of 1792 until the Federal Reserve of 1913, our dollar increased in strength fivefold. What took a dollar in 1792 only required 20 cents around the turn of the century. That's because it was backed by gold and silver. After the Federal Reserve, we have literally, and I am not exaggerating, we have lost over 99.5% of the spending power of the dollar. It is dwindling, it is fraying, it is going away, but this explains why the system tries to keep you away from what we the Bible tells you to do. Because when you get into God's monetary saving program, and trust me, that's what he wants you to do, you are disconnecting from the system altogether. They lose complete and total control. The establishment hates precious metals. They hate biblical assets. I talked to a client the other night that was trying and trying and trying to convince her broker to understand the importance of her owning precious metals. They're never going to do it. They can't. Their entire livelihood is wrapped up in deception. The thing that I like is I'm selling what God says to sell. I'm selling what God tells you to do. I'm selling what I believe in. I love it. The margins are small. There's nothing else on earth that is as liquid as what we offer. If you put your money in the bank, and I don't care what it is, you do not know where your money is. It's on some, you know, tick board on some cyber spot in space somewhere. You don't even know. It's not even real money. It's symbolic of money. You can print something up or look at a screen that says you have it there. But it's just a loan from somebody. They took your money and promised to pay you back with no interest. And in the meantime, and you might say, no, I'm getting interest. Okay, I'm sorry. 1/3 of 1%. Okay, you feel better? That means on $100,000, you're going to get $300 a year. That's what's going on out there. Okay? So essentially, the great financial deception is taking place. You can check out. Our country was on a gold standard. You can be on a gold standard. Now, when we do sizable portfolios, and trust me, we do, we've done portfolios. I mean, I don't care if you bring me $10, $100, $1,000. We've seen numbers well, and, you know, into the seven figures, up into eight. I mean, we do it all. We're fine. Not one is appreciated more than the other. We want to just serve God and do the right thing and help you out. But we do build portfolios. It's important that we balance you out. We give you a nice sector wash, and we're good at it. I'll just keep it at that. Let us do what we do best. People want gold and silver and all that, and you're going to get plenty of it. And then we're going to add the same stuff. Right now, folks, silver dollars, a crazy, crazy awesome value. Why? Because all eyes are on the stock market. You can buy antique silver dollars for about the same price as an ounce of silver, roughly. You can buy the old U.S. $20 gold pieces. Now, you're talking about an antique $20 St. Gaudens uncirculated gold piece for maybe 4 or 5% over the gold spot price. Think of that. That doesn't even make sense. They're the best values out there. And so, you know, we've got limited supply. You know, we've probably got a few dozen of gold, and we've got a fair amount of the dollars. We did have the pleasure of uncovering a massive, really amazing hoard out of Western Montana from probably the most famous and successful person to ever come out of that state. I can't say who, but I can tell you it's profound. We've got great stuff. There's a lot of stuff that's just overlooked. I've been doing this a long time. I know what markets do. I know what's rare. I know what's desirable. We have it. So the confiscation, people are concerned. Will the government confiscate again? Here's why. They never did silver. Don't worry about it. They won't. And here's why. When they confiscated, not that they had any right, and not that it really was a confiscation because they did pay you for it, but once they collected 85% of the gold above ground in the United States, then they increased the gold price from 20 to 35 an ounce. That gave our government an instant 75% increase in the value of their holdings. In return, because all these gold claws and silver claws notes were still floating around all over the place, people lost 37.5% of their spending power of the dollar simultaneously with the government gaining 75%. It's just what happens with, you know, the dollar. It's what happens with math, okay? One gains, one loses. It's a fleecing by the government. So during the confiscation from 33 to 71, you weren't allowed to own gold bullion, okay? Gold jewelry was okay. A lot of companies will sell like sovereigns, old British sovereigns and Swiss 20 francs and say, Well, see, these are dated before 1933, and they are not confiscatable. Not true. During the confiscation, one of the number one things they went after was all foreign gold coins. Nothing foreign was exempt. All U.S. coinage was exempt. It was never faced with that. Not only that, the items that we sell, folks, into portfolios, people come in and they go, I want a bunch of this pure gold bars and stuff. Those are all reportable by 1099s. You want to make a wallpaper for the IRS, you know, more power to you. But we sell a lot of products that are legislated, listen to me, legislated non-reportable. That means Congress wrote a bill that says there's no reporting on these specific items. When you get into old collectible coins. Now, when you think of a $20 gold piece that trades as its gold content only, and it's over 100 years old, it's magnificent, it's the most beautiful coin ever made, it's got an ounce of gold in it, and you can buy it just for the gold, it's still a collectible. So as a collectible, there's no reporting, there's nothing at all. You're free. Private, anonymous, okay? It may be a collectible that's just really cheap right now, but we can, we help you with all that. We will build you a wonderful portfolio. Dollars, folks, if you've got some money you want to sink away right now, I've got a phenomenal, phenomenal group of silver dollars. I have thousands, but I've got a lot of nice rolls of better dates that are cheap. It should be a lot more. Just good long-term investment stuff. We're selling everything right at dealer wholesale, seriously, to the public. That's our new policy, just to make sure you're getting the best deal. So basically, folks, I'm out of time again. Don't forget, we have the highest rated depository service in Northwest United States. We have every radio show pre-recorded on our website at coinsplus.com. Okay. It is important. 401ks, IRAs, whatever. Folks, it is important that you deal with what you've got. These times are not going away. Something is coming, I assure you. Thanks for tuning in. Take care. God bless. And remember, it is Friday. Have a terrific weekend. And please come and see us. Let us help you out. We'd love to. Call me for any questions on your investments. Take care. Bye-bye.